Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 505. My next guest is Gary Kobinger. He is the director of the Galveston National Lab. Dr. Kobinger has authored over 300 peer-reviewed scientific manuscripts, accumulated more than 20 years of experience working in or managing high-containment laboratories. He is currently advising World Health Organization about monkeypox, and he joined us now. Gary, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me.
So I'm going to guess, let's talk first a little COVID, that when you got your PhD, you hoped for an interesting career, but I bet the once in 100 years pandemic is a little more than you bargained for. Just walk me through what it was like being in your position when COVID hit.
Absolutely. That's an interesting question. I mean, you know, we work with those infectious diseases when you're in my field for now over 20 years for me. And, you know, we saw SARS, the first one. You know, I spent about 12 months of my life in West Africa during Ebola. There is a lot of event that we don't see in the media, and that's how we like it ourselves. That means we can contain them. But the COVID was unprecedented. And, you know, this is the kind of event that you somehow hope to not see because it's still ongoing and it's been doing a lot of damage.
Do you think, Doc, eventually, and I'm not trying to get into politics or conspiracy theories at all, but do you think eventually we'll be able to nail down, okay, this is where it came from? I think we just nailed down the Black Plague like this year. Are you confident we'll be able to figure out what happened?
I hope so, honestly. I still hope so. Of course, the more we wait to dig into this and to really get hard data, the harder it gets. But I still think it's possible to, you know, to get some reliable information and data and start to understand better where the virus came from. And I still think it's very important to know. It will help us a lot to prevent another emergence.
So let's talk about monkeypox. I'll be honest with you. When I first heard it, it was a bit of a joke and like, oh my gosh, now look what's happening. And now it's monkeypox and blah, blah, blah. And then it was, okay, this is for real. And there are cases. Now it's in the U.S. And the symptoms just sound absolutely excruciatingly painful and horrific. Kind of walk us through the 101 of what monkeypox is.
Yeah, so monkeypox is a virus that is surrounded by an envelope, pretty much like SARS-CoV-2 that caused COVID. Except that it's a DNA virus. We are used now to hear about RNA vaccine. So these type of viruses based on DNA, they are quite stable. This specific one is a cousin, if you want, of smallpox that, you know, was eradicated in 1980, so 42 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And actually, we've seen monkeypox being more and more present and detected in Africa over the past 15 years. It was somehow common in the 70s, and then it kind of disappeared, and it started coming back in 2005 to 2010. And as a matter of fact, a lot of work has been put into monkeypox since. And you know, the great news about this is there's two vaccines right now that are working against monkeypox. There is some treatments as well that are efficacious and that are licensed. So we're well positioned, so to speak. That said, this virus is spreading, and it's spreading in the community mainly that is hard to reach. Where there is a stigma, and when somebody's infected, they what is needed is they need to isolate themselves to make sure they don't infect others, because mm-hmm. the best way to stop this is to break the chain of transmissions. Mm-hmm. Now, that means that these people have to stay home, because it's a mild disease right now. And so it means that these mildly infected people need to stay home between 3 to 4 weeks, sometimes 5 weeks. So now imagine when you ask somebody to stay home for 5 days for COVID, and people have problems with that. So, you know, 4 weeks at home, you need help. You need somebody to bring you food. And if you're living with other people, you need to make sure that there's no contact, and that you break that you don't allow for transmission to occur.
So, Doc, completely unfair question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What are the chances that this becomes widespread? I'm just leaving COVID aside. We don't even need to compare it. But just, you know, what are the chances that we start seeing, you know, emails at our work saying, like, so-and-so is out with monkeypox?
Oh, I think this is, this is less likely. I hope that we're not going to get there. You know, monkeypox is still stoppable. But I think we're going to see more cases before we see that trend going down. Just to give you some numbers, as of today, there was cases in 71 countries, 65 of which had never reported monkeypox before. In the U.S., the state of New York alone went from 581 cases yesterday to 711 today. So that's, you know, that's a big jump in one day. And it means that there's other cases that probably have not been detected. But we're still in somehow low numbers right now. And, you know, it's still, again, there's vaccine being rolled out as we are talking about this now. So it is still something that will be contained. The question is when and hopefully the sooner the better.
We're talking to Dr. Gary Kobinger, who is the director of the Galveston National Lab. Gary, one last question. Since you have so much experience in these biocontainment facilities, for the rest of us civilians, the only time we see this is when it's depicted on a movie and something bad happens and a virus gets out and wipes out the populations. Make us feel better that these places are safe and they're necessary and doing good work.
You're talking about the labs?
Yes.
Oh, you know, I can tell you the labs have so many layers around them. I'm talking about North America. And the standards are so high that, like, for example, monkeypox does not come from a lab. I can guarantee you that. Actually, it was traced back to a natural infection. But the big issue, I'll tell you this, the big issue is that, and this is why we are all into training and exchanging our protocol, because there's a lot of labs worldwide and they don't have all the same standards. And so one of our mandates here is to make sure that we do all we can to share our standards with others and make sure that we do everything we can that they work with the same many layers of safety. But listen, the benefits that you have to realize is that if you wouldn't have those labs, we wouldn't know anything about those pathogens. Mm-hmm. And that includes we wouldn't have vaccine and treatments, and we wouldn't be able to detect them. So, you know, it's when you put all this together, it's a very safe enterprise in North America for a lot of benefits. A lot better, actually, than nuclear energy, when you think of it, in my view.
Very interesting. Doc, thank you so much for your time, and thanks for what you do. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Scary.
Yeah, I wish I would ask this, but I'm wondering why 700 cases a day is not a huge deal, I guess. But he doesn't sound concerned about it, which is good, because I don't want to start freaking out about
COVID
something else.
COVID at its worst, wasn't it like thousands and thousands of cases, like tens of thousands of new cases?
Isn't it weird? I don't remember. I don't remember the numbers.
Well, I think New York was, 10,000 a day or something. I don't know. That just sounded like a lot to me on a daily basis. But
well, it sounds much more difficult to transmit.
Yeah.
You need much more contact. So...
Well, I don't want to be the one.
Yeah, you're already getting glasses and braces.
Right. I mean, I can only handle so much this year.
That is just...
I appreciate
and
that.
And now she's got monkeypox.
At that point, it's just over the edge.
I appreciate that she really keeps hammering home, like, now listen, I do not want...
I don't. And I don't want
monkeypox, stay away from me.
While we're making statements, I don't want to get COVID again.
And you're not going to date that devil guy.
That is right. I'm not
You are taking some stands.
Who wants to date the devil guy?
Man, I found the devil guy. He looks like the devil.
He do be
looking like the devil. He's got like he doesn't have a nose.
And
he's
just got
like holes.
He's like, hey, any church, please just let me inside. We know what you're doing.
Rach knows this guy's soul.
Trish.
I really disagree with her.
Yeah. He's going to every denomination going like, I just want you to let me inside. Like, oh yeah, you're so convicted.
Ew. I'm going to have dreams about this devil guy. I don't like it.
Oh my gosh.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 523. Our pal Maria Kina is in from the newsroom. You've had quite a day.
It's been a little busy.
Yeah, you've been running around like crazy.
Yeah.
So the Doerne verdict was in. You were there.
Yes.
Sounds like it was really something. Tell us the story.
Well, it was first of all, the judge cautioned everyone in the courtroom, and it was a full courtroom. Lots of deputies came in. I don't want to hear a sound out of anyone in this courtroom, regardless of what the verdict is. And the jury, the clerk read the counts, and it was silent, and all of a sudden, a family member of Stefan Cannon's went running out of the courtroom, banged open the door, and then went into the hallway, and there were just blood-curdling screams coming from her. And the Doerne family was you could hear sniffling and crying because they were very relieved. And then everyone started hugging each other. But there was a lot of decorum in the courtroom until finally the jurors were allowed to leave. And then that's when they really started talking. And I think you started to see more and more emotions from the Doernes coming out.
So I don't know much about the facts of this one. And I'm not asking you to play, you know, amateur judge or attorney here. But was it close? Like, when the defendant's family member got up and ran out screaming, did it hit you more like just, oh, my God, my loved one's going to jail, or like, this is unfair?
Both.
Both.
Both. Because they convicted on this with no DNA evidence. None. It was strictly based on video surveillance from the scene, what a woman had testified to that had lived with Cannon and her boyfriend at the time, and stories changed. What was interesting, two people were put out of the court yesterday, and it was later determined that they might have been making some sort of signs to the witnesses that were up there talking.
Wow.
Which I guess was making the witnesses a little uncomfortable.
Oh, wow. Wow.
But the defense, you know, kept on trying to say when they were presenting their case, and it only took them a couple hours today. They kept on saying the fact that, okay, you're going with this guy, Mark Jackson, who is also facing charges in this because he was with Cannon that night. You're trying to say that he went and told police this, and after he was interrogated, of course he told police what they wanted to hear. He was trying to get a lesser sentence, and he did get a lesser sentence. So the defense was trying to poke holes in a lot of that.
Yeah.
They just had a lot of concerns, the fact that you were going on video surveillance, but there was a social media posting where his dreadlocks were then cut off a week after the killing, and there was a TV in the house. So there was a lot of evidence that they submitted, the prosecution did, but as far as DNA, no, none. And they had the evidence technician guys come in from the police department, the homicide detectives, also the medical examiner who conducted the autopsy and did the investigation, which Anne Doerne, I asked her about that. She couldn't stay in the courtroom for that.
Yeah.
And there's video of the shooting.
Really?
Somebody Facebooked this live while it was happening.
Oh, my God.
So you could see Captain Doerne take his last breath.
Oh.
And he was shot at 10 times, four hit him, collarbone, thigh, hand, and it was the chest wound that killed him.
My gosh. And we think that, did they surprise each other?
Doerne, you know, who was retired, but those were his friends at Lee's Pawn Shop, the burglar alarm went off, and so he went to go and see what he could do. They had planned that night to go looting. That wasn't the only place they looted. They looted Rainbow. They looted a Foot Locker down here. Because if you remember that night, That was wildness. A lot of stores were being looted. Downtown, the 7-Eleven.
Is that when that was on fire? Okay,
that burned to the ground.
Yeah, that's the same
firefighters were being shot at. Four police officers, St. Louis police officers, were shot, but not critically injured. Because when I was talking to John Hayden, the chief at that time, while about his officers who had been shot, nobody realized what was going over at Lee's Pond. And we had heard rumors about it, but nobody knew that it was a retired police captain.
Wow. Thanks, Maria. We appreciate it. All right.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.